Rough Trade is giving away a third of the first 3 months of the Rough Trade Club plus new music membership exclusively to 101 Part-Time Jobs listeners. Become a member of Rough Trade Club New Music and you'll receive the Rough Trade Album of the Month straight to your door every month on an exclusive vinyl pressing with bonus material. Club members have received exclusive pressings of albums from Sufjan Stevens, Sprints, The Last Dinner Party, English Teacher, and Over Mono, just to name a few, this past year alone. Sign up using the promo code CLUB101POD and you'll get Rough Trade's Album of the Month, Camera Obscura's Look to the East, Look to the West, for a third of the usual price. By signing up, you'll be getting Rough Trade's exclusive issue of the album on opaque purple in a gatefold sleeve, plus a bonus CD containing 5 demos. Don't want the album of the month but still want all the benefits? Sign up to the standard tier using CLUB101POD and you'll still get the first month free. You'll also get free shipping on all orders, 10% off at the bar and on secondhand vinyl in store, and exclusive access to sold out Rough Trade events. So don't hang around. Head to roughtrade.com/club and sign up with the code CLUB101POD. That's CLUB101POD and claim money off Rough Trade's Album of the Month today. This offer is for UK residents only. Do you play in bands? I did for the longest time, and I wish that I knew that DistroKid was a thing. I don't even think it existed back then. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy with unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of your royalties and earnings. 1 million+ artists rely on DistroKid to get their music on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, and all the major streaming services. When you get DistroKid, you can see a DistroKid bank and withdraw your earnings. You get notified when you've earned royalties and you can withdraw via the app. And you can even check your streaming stats on Spotify and Apple. Get 30% off your first year on DistroKid by going to distrokid.com/VIP/101pod. 30% off for your first year. That's not bad. We know it's a tough world out there. Why don't you make it easier for yourself? And to get 30% off that free year as an artist, where you get 100% of your royalties and earnings, go to distrokid.com/VIP/101pod. All right, stay with me. I'll be right back after this.
I'm Dougal from Juno Dream. It's Record Store Day, and we're at Rough Trade East with 101 Part-Time Jobs.
Okay, 101 Part-Time Jobs, Record Store Day 2024 from Rough Trade. I spoke to Dougal from Juno Dream. Their record, Pools of Colour, that just came out, is a really interesting sounding record. Got loads of different sounds on it, and to be honest, I don't really know what it is. I think like we're getting into a quite a good time in the world with that. Hey, check out this album. I think you might like it. I have no idea what it sounds like, and if I do say it sounds like anything, it might ruin it for you. So this is what I'm gonna do. Juno Dream, Pools of Colour, great sounding record. Here's my chat with Dougal at Rough Trade East on Saturday. We also filmed these interviews, which you can see on Instagram at 101 Part-Time Jobs Pod, and on TikTok with the same name, and on YouTube. So search 101 Part-Time Jobs on YouTube and you'll be able to see these full video interviews very soon.
Thank you. We've only just met.
Lovely.
How can you do that?
Lovely to meet you.
Lovely to meet
literally
you.
Only just met right now.
Juno Dream.
Hi.
Do you have any, like, what? I was going to ask if you had any reoccurring nightmares, but that's probably not the best place
to
start.
No, let's start there. I actually do. I have a plane crash nightmare.
Damn, how vivid?
Like saying, there's always like a baby that starts crying, and then, so like, I'm having my sort of cup of water. You know, you get those little peel cups of water, and it's all fine, and then suddenly, and you start free falling.
How often do you have it?
Well, actually, they kind of stopped now recently, but it used to happen sort of once every couple of months, I'd say.
Let's hope they come back.
I hope so, yeah, because that was just before we kind of did the first album, so, you know, and it turned out okay. So I'm kind of hoping for some nightmares, yeah.
And it is the likelihood of you going out in a plane crash is very rare.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's just one of those things, though, when you're on a plane and you realise, no idea how it works. It's like X tons in the sky, hurtling at 300 miles an hour.
Yeah.
It's not a vibe.
I don't think it's too far of a segue to be like, is that kind of like what being in a band and being an artist is like?
Well, I never got a therapist because I couldn't afford one, but if I was, when I was looking into it, apparently it's when you get them if you feel like your life's out of control. And I think if you're in a band, your life's out of control. Not in like the cool sort of, we're out of control.
Not like that guy from the OC way.
I've never seen it.
What was his name? Who's the guy from the OC?
Brad.
Brad.
Chet.
It was one of them. Yeah, the OC is great.
Dirk.
But it's like being out of control, it doesn't, actually it very rarely feels.
Is that one mine?
Yes,
I better not lose that, sorry.
It is a real point.
Yeah.
Just from the outside, being out of control looks kind of, you know, zany,
yeah.
Fun, wasted, going out of the pub every day.
Wow. You know, maybe if we did that, it would be fun. But I think it's more just like, you're trying to do this thing, which might not even exist anymore, you know? I mean, because we grew up with watching, like, documentaries about bands like Radiohead or, like, Coldplay or all of these people kind of doing this amazing thing where they'd break out, they'd sign to a record label, they'd sell like 5 million copies, and then like, then you're kind of in it and you're just sort of printing cash, I guess, and gets to do all the fun things.
It's physical albums that you're
yeah,
selling.
Yeah, yeah, whereas I think, you know, because we grew up with that, we definitely want to be an album band, but it's just a completely different landscape now.
Mm-hmm.
But there's lots of benefits as well.
How do you reconcile that? I mean, in lieu of that,
yeah.
Without that, what do you do?
Well, I think you just, well, we're still working it out, but I don't know. I think there's lots of good things. I always try and think of Paul McCartney had social media in the 60s. He'd probably just use it the whole time. You know, it's like, I think people often equate like their favorite artists and say, well, they didn't have to do that, so they wouldn't do this, and blah, 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 blah. But I actually think like a lot of the people that we hear about, I don't know, I think they're there because they really want to be there. There's a lot of great musicians, but if you want to be playing big stages, I think a lot of those people actually think very carefully about how they do it.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of, I think you can tell when an artist is thoughtful.
Yeah.
I think you can smell that. I think you get like an intuition.
Can I ask a question?
Because yeah.
This is your interview. Who's a thoughtful artist to you? Put you on the spot there.
No. I mean, Divorce, who are playing next door.
Oh, I'm very excited to see them.
They're a thoughtful band.
Great.
Because there's textures, there's layers, and I can't articulate that very well right now. I'm not being very eloquent, but there's just something deeper.
Yeah, when you get those.
There's imagery.
There's albums where there's just layers and mm-hmm. layers. Like, a lot of people say in Rainbows mm-hmm. is just like the ultimate album for that. I've heard so many people on like interviews just say that's their go-to record because every time they listen to it again, just something different happens, mm-hmm. which is quite amazing.
I think that's a mark, isn't it? When you listen to it and something, you hear something else. I mean, The National,
yeah,
on a bigger scale, are one of those bands.
I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't really
that's
get
fine.
Them.
That's fine.
I don't dislike them.
Yeah.
But
that's what's nice about music.
Yeah,
is that you can be, you can debate all night long for every day of your life.
Which we will. About The National.
Do you have like a group of friends where you're chatting about music all the time and sharing the records you bought and new discoveries, old memories?
Basically just my band, my only friends. But yeah, I think we've never been like, I don't have that many vinyl heads. All my vinyl head friends are into electronic music. So I went to Bristol Uni and a lot of my friends and like housemates and stuff, the obsession was like, you know, the big sort of street cred was like, can you put on a night? Can you get your friends there? Can you get a DJ along? My friend actually got Peggy Goo like 7 years ago or something before she was just mm-hmm. about to take off. I think we even like hung out with her or something, and like I just did not get electronic music. I was like, this is rubbish, you know, you're not going anywhere, blah, 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 blah. I didn't say that, obviously. But I don't know. Yeah, like that's why I kind of like electronic music though, because that seems like it's quite a rare sort of area where that's still going on.
The records
such
are still
a big
such
way.
Yeah.
And they just go so far to find tracks that no one's ever heard and rediscovering tracks. I don't know, maybe I haven't really discovered that in the indie scene as much yet. Don't think there's the same kind of like sharing track culture as you get in electronic music. Like people go to events and like mm-hmm. try and find the, like you see on sort of, you know, when you get a DJ posting a Boiler Room, someone's like, track ID, mm-hmm. you know, you've got all these fans mm-hmm. just obsessed with the rarity of things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's different, but you know, I think for indie music, I mean, I don't know, I'm not a huge vinyl collector myself, but it's very much merchandise. It's like the way to show you're a fan of someone, which maybe you don't really have an electronic music.
I think it's a generational thing.
Yeah.
Getting records from your parents or from family.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, you know, they were listening to this 30 years ago before I was born in some cases.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is a very special thing. And back in the day, that was how they listened to music.
Yeah, 100%. And the other thing is like, you know, if you consider like the sort of average journey to hearing a song, it's like on a playlist, which you got on in the car while you're talking to a friend, or maybe you're on the way to work. And it's like so impersonal. There's no choice there. You just fed something. And so to be able to actively choose a vinyl and hold it, I don't know. Even if you don't play it, it's just like, I'm a fan.
What was your first record?
Parachutes, Coldplay.
Good band.
But do you know what? They're just great.
They are good.
I was actually this morning, because we're getting into album two territory, and every time we do this, there's so much doubt going on the whole time. So I'm just like...
Doubt as songwriters?
Yeah, just about the whole thing. Like every morning, I'm just like, what the hell are we doing? Blah, blah, blah. But actually, if you kind of do the homework in a way, you just literally need to read a book or watch a film. So I'm trying to get into like rewatching all of these documentaries. Mm-hmm. Great one, 2002, 2003, Tour Diary, Rush of Blood to the Head, Coldplay, Black and White. Come on! They're just like the least likely people to be superstars, but they are just, I don't know, they're just so inspiring. So I think those first two records for me, I just like always go back to as simple, great music. I think it's great because there's so many different avenues. Like, I guess what I was saying about streaming is, you know, Beach House, for instance, just hit a billion streams on Space Song.
Great.
I feel like in the 90s or 80s or any time before the internet, I don't know whether a band like Beach House would have broken in such a big way.
Yeah.
Because they're not really like showmen. They're not sort of...
Yeah, bands you look watch on YouTube, they're on at a party upstairs where people are smoking.
But I think it's so cool that they can, because their stuff is that great, that it can reach those heights. Mm. But I think for a band like us, I don't know, I think we're very much, we need to be playing live the whole time. We need to be meeting people. I think the biggest sort of sense of pride for us is, first of all, the music, but second of all, we kind of do write the music in a way to create an experience as well. We do have that in mind when we're writing a song. It's like often a question of, that would be so cool live if it goes to this bit. And I don't know, I just think for us, like, these things are great, so.
And for Record Store Day, did you have a special copy of the record?
We don't have any special one yet. Maybe we should get
one. I thought I saw one online. I thought it said it was...
Special one?
Yeah.
Maybe we just changed the tag to
Maybe.
Star
Wars. Yeah, smart.
Oh, no, we do, sorry. I'm mistaken, we've got these limited edition ones. So it's all, I won't bore you with it, but I will. We've got these, like, this, our logo. Is it bad having a logo?
I think that's cool, actually.
We're talking about graphic. Let's talk about that in a sec. But, you know, we've got these sort of, we kind of accidentally came up with this 5-block color logo when we started, before I was a graphic designer. And then when we came to making this record, we had this title track called Pools of Color. We're like, let's call it that. And then it became all about how we can represent color in the world, which some people think is quite bleak right now. And so that's what the whole album's about. And there are these vinyls which have a color each.
Very nice.
And we're kind of hoping people would be like, oh, just get them all then. And a few people have, which is sort of good.
I mean, money is kind of more blunt and opaque now. You know, I feel like if you earn £30,000 and live in London, you're not saving.
No.
Much of that.
No.
And I think it's important that we do talk about it.
Yeah.
And I think it's important we know what other people are... Because the British people, we're quite crude about money.
Yeah.
We're quite small about it.
Do you think... I often think people are quite touchy, that it's so... No one speaks about it.
No one speaks about it.
I'd appreciate it if people did more, you know. Because it's quite... It's probably one of the most important things in your life.
100%.
Not in a sort of shallow way.
No, but you need money to do anything.
Yeah,
if you're like going to get your morning iced latte...
Huh? Like fly private jets.
Fly private jets. I want to fly for a private jet. How have you kind of reconciled that? You're a graphic designer.
Yes.
I mean, that's quite a good job to have in a band because you can make stuff for the band.
Yeah.
But you can work for other people.
Yeah.
Maybe on the go, a bit of remote WFH in there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, work from home.
Yeah.
I was thinking WWF.
Yeah, WWF.
On the side.
Save the pandas.
Oh, is that? I was thinking now WWE then.
Yeah,
sorry.
There we go, yeah.
Yeah, I think you, I don't know, we've sort of, it's tricky because it's very hard to do with a full-time job. I mean, I actually had a full-time job in advertising for all of, I think, 6 months. I actually got fired twice. And I got fired twice because I was so distracted when I was there. I was sort of doing these projects and, you know, it was a good job. And I don't know, I was so into what I was doing on the outside that it just was never going to work. So we've all found ways of like side hustling to sort of keep this, I don't know, just to protect this thing that you have.
And giving it value, I think, is something that's actually pretty innovative and radical.
Yeah.
Because you say, this thing that I've made, that I've shared, and people come to our gigs, and we have a small team around us with a label manager.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, if you know, you need to value that. Well, you don't need to. But like, valuing it is probably the coolest thing you can do.
I think so. I mean, again,
in my opinion,
I think it's so dependent on what people want. I mean, I kind of have this thing with artists, or like music in general, where some people get a bit sort of sore, or they're just like, I don't really care about, you know, how it goes, or this, that, and the other. And I sort of think, well, if you didn't, you probably wouldn't. You'd be happy just playing it in your room. Like, I think there's no shame in saying, we want to be fucking big. You know, it's not because we want to make a load of money, but it's for us. I think it's like, we're very into the whole world we're building. It's like, for me, if like I write a song, I'm thinking about the color of it, or what the music video is going to look like, or what the stage production is going to be like. And they're all big things. And I'm like, I want to do those things. So to do that, we need to grow.
That's your language.
Yeah,
it's communication.
So. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know, a big dream for us is to play, you know, we want to get to 2,000-3,000 cap venues for the stage show more than anything. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not
for the production.
Yeah.
The lights, the.
And create those moments, because we've got these moments in these songs where I'm just like, just I want people to feel that. I want to feel it.
You What's know? The moment where you have felt it? What bands have you seen where you've thought, fuck, I'm being elevated right now?
Well, yeah, I mean, I saw Young Fathers at the Albert Hall recently. That was amazing. I mean, they actually had no stage production. They just had this sort of blank thing at the back. And I was like, oh, you know, but I'm quite short-sighted, mm-hmm. even with my glasses. So I like the big screens. But then as soon as the show came on, they just projected all these shadows. And suddenly this completely organic stage show is happening. I was completely blown away by it. I think they're doing something so unique. And the fact that they've got as big as they have just by, I don't know, believing in themselves and their art, I think that's a great example of a band that just really protect what they do. We're like the sort of not the story that we thought we'd be at this point. Like you see like Coldplay headlining Glastonbury on 26, you know, second record, it's perfect, blah, blah, blah. Like we've always like been brainwashed by these narratives, but we've never really been that like, we've never really had that perfect catalyst moment at the start. It's just been this steady, like, well, we still love this thing and it's getting better. Mm. So let's just keep pushing on. It's like so unglamorous and sort of Hollywood. There's no like, you know, we're here and we're ready and everyone loves it. It's just like, no, we're just getting better at this thing and the vision's getting bigger.
And it's okay. It's good for bands to work part-time jobs and play music.
It's essential. It's so, but I just think that, again, there's no shame in that as well. I've never really had an open conversation with musicians about what everyone does. It's almost like sometimes I feel guilty being like, oh, I kind of work half my time as a graphic designer. Because in a way it's like, well, you're not taking it seriously, you know. But actually, I don't know. I think it's also,
we can do lots of things.
We can do lots of things. And also, I just think if you can hustle and, you know, if you really care about something, you will find ways to make it work. And there's no shame in, you know, trying lots of different things out. And I don't know, I just feel like we've literally had our first album in January. We've been preparing for that moment for like 12 years, as I said.
Great record.
Thank you.
Very invitational.
Do you think?
Yeah, it's like a pillow.
Oh,
it sounds like a pillow
really?
That I'm lying on a Saturday watching the football.
That's so nice.
With a cup of tea.
No one's ever described it like that. That's, maybe we should make soft album covers so people can lie on them.
That's a pretty good idea.
See, like, I'm always marketing, so. It's just about the money.
101 part-time jobs. You got fired a couple of times.
Yes.
Tell us about that. So what was it like being fired for basically being told you care more about your band than this job?
I left uni again and was sort of had this thing where I was like, well, I even started uni. I was like, well, I'm not going to be here very long because I'm going to be a rock star. And then like, never happened. And then after uni, all my friends started getting jobs. And I was like, I don't need one of those because I'm going to be a rock star. And then that didn't happen. And then, so I was like, fuck, I should probably get a job. Advertising, creative, sure. Got on this like grad scheme. Didn't really know what I was doing. I had this very cool, awesome boss.
Was it like What Women Want?
Oh, I don't know what that is.
Good film about marketing. I'm pretty sure it's a documentary about advertising.
Oh, cool. Anyway. Okay. Well, it wasn't like Mad Men, let me tell you.
Okay.
I was in this very dry bit. But my boss was very cool, Sophie, and she always like believed in me. And anyway, after 3 months, like not much was happening in the bit I was in. And so I just didn't do anything for 3 months. And it was not for lack of trying as well. I kept actively asking. And it was my first job. Anyway, no one really had the answer, and I certainly didn't. And then after 3 months, my boss was like, very sorry, hasn't really gone the way we hoped. Gonna have to let you go. And I was like, fine, no problem. on my way out, Project comes in, she's like, you gotta stay. And I was like, great. Okay, Project lasts for a week, and then I kind of like disappear into the, it's a big company, I just like disappear into it. Like
stay on the payroll, hopefully.
You know, and Pirates of the Caribbean. I was like in the walls. Anyway, and then COVID happened, and we were all kind of watching the TV, and I was like, this is it, round two. And then I got fired again.
And what's the story been since then? Is it finding clients, finding other cool projects? Because I imagine you want to be involved in projects where they like your style and you like their style.
Yeah, I think, well, personally, I kind of came to graphic design as like a, in a bit of a crisis mode in COVID, but I was like, okay, I want to keep doing music. I kind of wanted to work in a music studio, but I'm just so not technically able when it comes to engineering. Like someone will try and explain what a compressor does and I'm still like, I still don't get it. Yeah. But, you know, anyway, Tom, our bandmate, does, so we kind of produce our records together, and he's brilliant at all of that side of things. Yeah. And I'm a bit more floofy, whatever I do.
Well, all the members in bands need a job.
They need
like
a
floofy
Wayne
Kramer person. Said.
Yeah, exactly, everyone, but yeah. Anyway, so after I came into graphic design because I felt like there was something missing, started this thing, and I was like, oh yeah, cool, this is, because I have like, you know the thing where you see colors when you, like,
yes.
It can trick,
what's
like,
the word
some people
for it?
Like, I keep getting it wrong.
Yeah.
Synesthesia.
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 Synesthesia. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I had that. I kind of hate saying that because I always think it's like, well, I've got this thing, which is like, you know, I don't mean it like that, but like lots of
they're
people.
Quite vivid.
Yeah.
Or is it more of a sense?
No, it's like very vivid. It's just like, see, it's
you can
yellow,
see a yellow.
And it's sort of, you know. I don't know, I never really thought about it, but then I started graphic designing. I was like, there's so many parallels to making music to designing a project. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly my life kind of made a bit more sense. And I was like, okay, cool. Like when I'm uninspired with music, I'm just gonna design something. It could be like something corporate, or it could be for another artist, or it could be for our own thing, you know, just design a Juno Dream artwork, which I want to make a song for. And then you kind of make a song for that. And it's sort of, I don't know, it's kind of
work
nice
together.
Thought. Yeah, yeah, it's good fun.
Thanks so much for being up for this. Well, one final question.
Yes.
This is the serious question now. If you worked at a record store,
yes,
what kind of character would you affect upon to yourself? Would you be like a Jack Black in High Fidelity?
I think I'd be some sort of shitty, like morose, bitter guy that wanted to be on the stage. Like putting my own records in the things, you know. I think that's what I'd be.
Appreciate the honesty.
But yeah, anyway, thanks so much for this. And you know, shout out to my fellow bandmates that couldn't be here. But they're all talented, great, and we're working on a second record and it's sounding fucking flipping huge.
So there was Dougal from Juno Dream. They were scheduled to play at Rough Trade East on Record Store Day, but unfortunately the band couldn't make it. Big love to them, and I'm sure we'll all be seeing them very soon and exciting about the second record it's just alluded to. Cheers for listening to 101 Part-Time Jobs. We've got one episode left from Record Store Day coming up, and it's with Miles Kane, the self-professed king of rock and roll. So stick around for that, and make sure you subscribe to the show for our twice weekly, most times more, episodes with interesting, exciting artists that might be headlining a stage at Glastonbury, and they might be playing to 10 people down the Bird's Nest, but are both equally fantastic. Stick around.